There are a million ways to make money in the food service industry. You just have to find one. On the Titans of Food Service podcast, I interview real life movers and shakers in the food game who cut through all the noise to get to the top. My name is Nick Portillo, and welcome to the Titans of Food Service podcast. Let's jump right into it. Hello to my fellow food service community from my sunny Orange County, California studio. Nick Portillo here, and this is the Titans of Food Service. In today's episode, I have a remarkable guest, Reed McCord. Reed is the visionary founder and CEO of First Bite. Who's First Bite? First Bite is revolutionizing the food service industry by making it effortless to find menu and location data for every restaurant in the country. Pretty impressive. And on top of that, in his database, he now has college universities, non-commercial accounts. This is something spectacular. And he is building something that's going to change the way that we view the food service industry. First Bite helps businesses predict revenue opportunities, manage teams, contacts, and deals, and provide all the data and sales tools needed for growth. Before founding First Bite, Reed played a pivotal role in building Impossible Foods, from its early stages to a revenue run rate exceeding $100 million. His extensive experience includes leading strategy, revenue management, business ops, analytics, and S&OP reporting directly to the president. Join us as we dive into Reed's journey, his insights on the food service industry, and the innovations he's driving at First Bite. Let's go ahead and welcome Reed. Reed, welcome to the Titans of Food Service podcast. I appreciate you coming on here, man. Thanks for taking time.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So I like to start off with the Fiery Five food service questions. These are nice, easy, fun icebreaker questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready. And I have one for you. I have one for you at the end, too.
Okay. The first one is, if you could have dinner with any one person, either historical or alive, who would it be and why?
Okay, so this isn't a person exactly.
Okay.
But I recently realized I know like a lot. I'm sure like you, I know a lot of millennials, and I have a lot of friends that are Gen X, that are boomers, and I know a lot of babies. But I don't really know any like middle Gen Z people, and there's a lot in the media about who is this Gen Z. I have a friend who's a high school teacher, and I've been learning their language from him a little bit, but I would love to dine with Gen Z and learn their ways. And, you know, I think any marketing meeting you've been in the last 10 years has all been about like, how do we address millennials? Yes. And there's been these moments where everybody looks at me like, okay, explain, like, how do we reach the millennials as a millennial? But I don't know anything about Gen Z directly. So I think that would be my dinner would be out with Gen Z.
Incredible. So I'm a millennial myself, and where I live, I'm in between two high schools. Mm. And so I'm surrounded by Gen Z people. Like when I go out to eat, they're all over the place. It's just fun to you know, they're so much more unique. I mean, millennials, they used to think we were a little out there, a little crazy,
totally.
But it's just fun to see the next generation where they've got, you know, they're heavily involved on social media and things like that. There's times now where I'm like, man, I feel old, even though I'm only 31, where they're like the things that are popular on the internet and pop culture, like I just don't follow those things at all, you know, but I see they're always on their phones and just their style is different. So it's interesting to see, you know, that generation grow up for sure.
Yeah, it's happening. We're turning into Gen X.
Totally. Okay. So I know you're a Huntington Beach native, so I'm going to make this a Huntington Beach question. If someone had one night in Huntington Beach, where must they eat?
Oh, boy. I haven't lived in Huntington Beach in 13 years or something like that. I could be wrong. This could be offensive. I think of Huntington Beach, the town of Huntington Beach, as a bit of a food desert. And so I send people, like if I'm in Orange County, I send people out of Huntington Beach to get the best food. Santa Ana for Mexican food or Little Saigon Vietnamese food, dim sum is best in the world. So I would say out of the town, but in Orange County. Orange County, amazing food. Huntington, I don't know.
I like that. I'd agree with you. It is, I think it's also, there's parts of it that are really tourist heavy, you know, especially you get down there to near the pier and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you're right, Orange County, it really is a melting pot. We have so many different cultures that live here, and you can get great cuisine from many different, you know, whether it's Italian or Mexican or Vietnamese, like it really is wide ranging. And anytime I travel other places throughout the other country or throughout the country or even into other countries, I'm like, we have a pretty darn good in Orange County. You can go into LA. Yeah. It's not far. San Diego. You know, props to the Orange County natives for really building out a nice food scene for sure. On the topic of cuisine, if you could only have one type of cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Yeah, it'd be Mexican cuisine for sure. There's just so many versions of Mexican food. There's upscale, truck, cart. It always delivers for me. I went to language school. I spent a summer doing language school in Oaxaca, which is, I think, the center of the best Mexican food. I'm a huge mole fan, quesillo, just, you know, I mean, Mexican seafood. There's so many different flavors of Mexican food. I could live on it forever for sure.
Do you speak Spanish?
I speak good enough Spanish. I had a fork in my life where I was almost fluent in Spanish. I lived in Nicaragua for almost a year and wow. In Mexico for a summer, in Spain for a summer or for a semester. And I had great Spanish. And then instead of going and living in Spanish speaking countries like I wanted to, I moved to San Francisco and went into food tech.
Are there any foods or dishes you've wanted to try but haven't yet?
Yeah. So I went to Mendocino, which is like northern California, redwood forests, you know, rainforest almost, and went mushroom gathering with some friends. And we got like 3 pounds of chanterelles in an hour. And that experience of like, okay, how do we cook these and how do we eat 3 pounds of chanterelles was incredible. Like the gathering your own food and then cooking it is amazing. And I've been thinking a lot about like, what are the other opportunities there? I did it with a chicken once. That wasn't so incredible, but I have always wanted to hunt for truffles, go out with someone who's got truffle dogs, find some truffles, and then figure out how to eat way too many truffles. So that's on my bucket list.
And my last one is, do you have a favorite food related memory from traveling?
Yeah, so my wife is an investor and she has investments in, you know, they invest in, you know, businesses in Europe and occasionally I will tag along with her on a business trip and she'll work all day and I'll sort of do, I went to Berlin a couple months ago and I had this schedule where I would sort of like explore until lunch and then work from lunchtime until midnight and then go out and get a doner kebab. And that was like my routine for 5 days in Berlin. And I love finding doner kebab in, especially in Europe, and Berlin has the best. I love those hours. It sounds horrible, but it was actually fantastic.
I've been to Berlin once and it's a really cool place. It has a kind of like an alternative type scene to it. And it wasn't like a hippie, but it was kind of a hippie place, but it was different. It was alternative.
Yeah. It was like weirdly, it reminded me of Portland, Oregon. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of hipster vibes in addition to it being Germany.
Exactly. So, all right. Yeah. You mentioned you have a question for me.
Yeah. So you've been in, I don't know, 2000 restaurants probably.
Yep.
You can start one restaurant concept. What do you start? Where is it? What's on the menu?
Oh my gosh. I would go with fast casual Mexican. The fast casual Mexican. There's a place here where I live in Newport, and I love the concept. And I swear it's the only place near me that it's a fast casual Mexican. You can go in. They've got TVs. They always host the like UFC fights and boxing fights, you know, which is paid. And so they air those on Saturday nights. And it's just a really good vibe to it. And they cater to a specific type of person going in there. I'd probably cater it towards, someone who's into sports and things like that. So that's probably what I would do. I like the fast casual game and I go there all the time. And my wife and I, we love it. And I'm always like, we need more places like this. Because when we're thinking of food, we always end up, you know, we go through the list of different places and we always end up there. So I'm like, if I could start a restaurant, that was what it would be. Fast casual Mexican with TVs. Cool. And really make it like kind of like almost like a sports bar feel to it, but it's Mexican food.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the like pick a place and just go back. They know my name. They know what I'm going to order mode.
So, absolutely. Usually. I'm the same. Yeah. They, every time we walk in, they already start making the food. We go there so much. And shout out to Chihuahua and Newport for all of the once a week visits. So. How's your week going here on a short Memorial Day week?
You know, I went out into Yosemite and put my phone in my glove box for 3 days. So it's been an abrupt transition, but catching up.
I did that too over the weekend. I decided Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, I was like, no emails, no phone. I think I averaged less than an hour on my phone each day. And it just felt nice to disconnect because I feel like you have to do that. You know, we saw each other at the NRA just the weekend prior. And when I work a week and then don't get any time off for the weekend and then just keep going the following week, I get exhausted. I'm not someone who takes a lot of vacations. I love vacations, but I need those like rest periods of like at least a Saturday or a Sunday where I can just de-stress and relax.
NRA is pretty brutal with the Friday, Saturday start. Like if you're a manufacturer, you might show up on Thursday. So you give up your weekend and then you're just in like a sea of 100,000 people for 5 days,
totally.
Bridget. Luckily, we had the 3-day weekend at the end, but it's exhausting.
It is. How long have you been going to the NRA show?
I think I've done 3 or 4. I've done a lot more Expo Wests. Impossible. Yeah. So I went with Impossible, and then I've done 2 with First Bite, but I've probably done 10 Expo Wests.
Nice. I always like the Expo West. It's, you know, in March, it's here in Southern Cal, and it's always nice and sunny out, and I just love it. Like, there is a focus a little bit on food service, I'd say, at that show, which is what my typical channel. But if anything, I like just going, seeing all of the new innovation and the new companies out there that are forming and new products. It's really fun. And it's just a vibrant culture when you're there. How did you get into the food service business?
Yeah. So let's see. Food service for me was totally unplanned. I got a job at Impossible Foods, what it was actually previously called Meraxi. So I was leaving college. I studied global business and Spanish, and my dream was to go work in Mexico speaking Spanish in business. And I got a job doing that at a company called Danaher. And then as I was leaving, literally at my graduation, I ran into the founder of Impossible Foods. And they were hiring their first sort of like business analyst hire. And it was pre-product, pre-revenue. And I walked away from the other job I was going to start, went to Impossible, drove up to the Bay Area the next week and was, you know, it was the first product we tried was actually terrible, but kind of dug in with a group of scientists and spent, we built the supply chain, built the finance function, was chief of staff to the CEO, and then eventually focused on go-to-market and Impossible Foods launched in food service first. So it was, you know, a lot of the, like, I was there almost 10 years. A lot of the last 5 years that I was there was focused on, you know, we closed something like 40,000 restaurants over 3 or 4 years. And my job was, I ran the strategy team and something we called revenue management, which was like, who gets the money? Should we invest in food service? Should we invest in retail price or promotion, more sales teams, broker spend, those types of things. And so spent a lot of time approaching food service from the manufacturer perspective and the like kind of investment optimization perspective while at Impossible. And definitely just kind of I've been all in. I left Impossible and was like, what's next? And I can't escape food service. I love that it's, first of all, it's like bigger than people think. Yeah. It's where people try new things. It's bigger than retail from a consumer spend perspective. But it also has this, I mean, it's also like for a lot of manufacturers, it's double the margin of the retail channel. But it has these challenges around how it's hard to measure investments. There's not a lot of data. There's, you know, a hugely scattered set of decision makers that are out there. And so it's a really interesting space to play. And then ultimately, a lot of food service adventures ends in like eating food. So I like that too. Really good food.
Amazing. Amazing. So tell me what you're up to now with First Bite. What is it and how are you changing the industry?
Yeah. So I guess anyone listening to this knows a little bit about food service, but you know, the way we see things are you have manufacturers and they're selling $300 to $400 billion worth of stuff to distributors mm-hmm. who then resell that to, you know, let's say there's about 1 million restaurants in the U.S., another 500,000 non-commercial locations, probably more depending on how you count it. And those distributors share zero data on, you know, who they sell to, what they sell it for, how much they sell. They own their relationships. And that information position, because they own those relationships, is part of how they compete. They do a really hard job, like picking up stuff from 50,000 manufacturers and dropping it off to a million and a half different places is a really hard job. But the impact of them not sort of sharing that data is it allows them to expand their margins. You know, it does result in higher food costs for restaurants, for consumers. And because they have 100,000 products, they're not in the business of helping any one manufacturer sell their products or grow over some other manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And so there's this inefficiency. There's, you know, at the manufacturer level, probably at the broker level, there's a lot of work just researching targets. The, you know, the manufacturers out there, they need to grow. So they're on Yelp, they're on Google, they're walking around trying to find and connect with restaurants. They're trying to puzzle and piece together different shreds of data they have about where their product's ending up. And they're going into the, you know, the meetings that I used to run at Impossible Foods around what should we invest in without a lot of data on what works and what doesn't work in the food service space. Even though they know it works, they lose to the retail team that's able to say, we ran a promo at Safeway and we saw this list, this lift in IRI or Nielsen 5 days later and it worked and we want to do it again. And even though that's 20% margin and food service is 40% margin, they can measure what they do. So it's an inefficient marketplace. There's a lack of information for manufacturers, and then there's really high transaction costs, repetitive tasks that folks do selling into the channel. And so we're trying to solve those problems. So we have a database of every single operator. So all commercial restaurants, K-12, C&U, and then we build workflow tools that make those jobs of connecting with those locations as easy as possible. So our customers are manufacturers, equipment providers, tech providers that want to find, you know, operators, connect with them, sell to them, or want to measure the different investments that they're making against connecting with and closing and managing their restaurant relationships.
That's impressive. What you're doing, has anybody ever done something like this before or tried at least?
Yeah, so there's data sources, there's suppliers of data on restaurants, and those models are often, you know, very expensive data sets on, you know, restaurant locations that are not built to be used by sales teams. And so where we've really tried to be different is to make this really powerful data integrated into the workflows of the sales teams that want to use it. So we don't really play in the insights space. We could tell you that kombucha is growing in Texas, and maybe that's helpful to someone in a manufacturer organization. But our sweet spot is empowering that salesperson or that revenue team to say, we sell pecans. We want to, you know, we want to find all 80,000 restaurants with pecans on the menu. We want to know who to contact. We want help executing, reaching out to those restaurants. We want to be able to track our investments and leads that are generated at trade shows, generated by brokers, generated internally, and really start to figure out what works. And so there's no one really building workflow tools on top of data that solves this sort of transaction cost problem for manufacturers and honestly for brokers as well. And so we're really focusing on, we want to give folks data automation on top and allow ultimately them to make sort of more predictable returns on their investments, and then even help them make those investments more competitive with each other. And we think that will make a more efficient marketplace for folks.
Let's say I'm a manufacturer, right? And I sign up with First Bite and I go onto your system. On there, I have, you mentioned restaurants, you mentioned college universities, maybe K-12 and some other non-commercial accounts. How do I engage with these customers? Is there contact information? You know, how are people interacting with those accounts on your database?
Yeah. So a lot of it is, of course, we say that our sweet spot customer has a workflow. So a manufacturer that is doing something to sell to restaurants, maybe they have some internal salespeople. They might have brokers that they work with. They might be going to trade shows. They might be doing marketing. We have built workflows to make all of those things that they're already doing easier and more efficient. Sure. So if you're using, on our platform, we have every operator and a CRM on top. If you're using Salesforce, your CRM doesn't have every customer in it mm-hmm. already, every potential customer in it. Our CRM has every single operator in it. So that's an example of by connecting those two things, you no longer have to do any data entry in CRM. It's much easier to work with, but we're taking an existing thing you're already doing and we're improving it. In the case of what you mentioned, like contact information, in the case of prospecting, mm-hmm. you're able to go down to a very specific cohort of locations that maybe have a, I don't know why I chose pecan salads, and find all the operators with that on the menu. And we then provide contact information for those operators. And because we're built for food service, let's say you're doing that with a Zoom Info or something like that yeah. today. If you take that list and you run it through sort of a normal horizontal contact lookup tool, you're going to get like five times less, fewer results for decision makers. And you're going to spend a lot of time using sort of food service world logic saying, that's a good contact, that's not a good contact. And because we're built for food service, we are able to find way more operators to prospect and the right decision maker at those operators. And it's sort of an unfair advantage against these horizontal tools like Zoom Info or Salesforce.
Sure.
And it goes on to those other motions. Like you could walk away from NRA with 1,000 leads, pair them into our database and see, what's the relative value, which ones of them have certain types of menu items on the menu, and even track next year, how many of those did you close and how does that stack up against the investment you made to get a booth and fly everybody out there?
So Salesforce connects into First Bite, is that correct?
We run into these, I'm sure many of your larger manufacturer customers have really mature HubSpot or Salesforce
mm-hmm. yeah.
implementations, and we can power those implementations. We've seen folks go from, in the food world, we meet 100 million revenue businesses that are using Excel to manage their relationships. Mm-hmm. We meet big businesses that have Salesforce and have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on it, building out, all sorts of custom workflows that aren't using it. Their team is just not using it because it's hard to use and tedious and there's lots of data entry and it just fell off along the way. But then there are teams that have really high working, high performing horizontal software instances that they've invested in building, and we can push data into that and push contact information into that and bidirectionally integrate where we can actually bring what they have into this database of all the customers that are out there and all the operators that are out there and start to see, okay, where am I getting traction? Am I getting traction with a certain type of restaurant? Should I double down on that? Or is there a big gap in the market in another type of restaurant? So we have to meet all of these different folks where they are, but it's sort of fun. Sometimes you'll get these organizations that have these, there's nothing more satisfying than not having all the features that Salesforce has, but finding people switch from that or like a NetSuite. We just had a customer just walk from NetSuite, jump into our CRM. We don't have every feature, but they're actually using it. They're all using it. And that's, wow. That's cool to see.
That is cool. I would imagine there's got to be some customers of yours that say, this is a great thing. I don't know how to use it though. For whatever reason, I'm just not a data person. I think it's really great. Is there a hands-on approach that you and the First Bite team could give to a customer where essentially, you're giving them access to the data, but you're working on reaching out and prospecting with these accounts that you have in your database?
Yeah. So a couple things I'll say is I'm a former sales nerd. So I was not really on the sales team, but I was doing the analytics, you know, ran the analytics function at Impossible. And sometimes we'll find a customer where there's that sort of like hero user that like learns everything. We also try to make it really easy to use. We have, one of our values is hospitality. And so it's very rare that there's data providers that have a hospitality mindset. Everybody wants this sort of product-led growth where they don't even talk to you. You sign up on the website, you get onboarded on the platform, you never talk to anyone. And we would like to automate a lot of that sort of startup process and training process. But we also think that food service is a unique space where people sometimes need a little bit more. And so we have our customers in Slack. We have a lot of customers have my cell phone number. We're sort of willing to make it as easy as possible to use yourself, which is like, we'll help you set something up. Maybe you've never, you know, we're not going to help you set up a trade show, but if you've never done outbound email marketing, we can help you set that up. We've done that for a number of our customers. We've actually done the execution of that for a number of our customers. And that can be something that is a way for them to prove out a new outbound motion. So if they don't at scale send personalized outreach to restaurants and they've never done it before, we have a team that has done it. We've reached out to, you know, 10,000 plus operators in the last 9 months that can sort of trailblaze that for them and either pass it on to them or keep running it. And so we're mostly in the software business, but we sometimes find some other thing that needs to be bridged for customers, and we're willing to either find partners to help us do that or build it for our customers and help them get started.
One challenge that I'm faced with as a broker is a lot of my manufacturer partners, they have, we call it GPO approvals, which essentially is buying groups like Sodexo, Food by Compass, Premier. Do you have all of those customers? You mentioned 500,000 non-commercial accounts. Are those built into your system by Sodexo, by Food by Compass, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, it depends. We don't have all of that data. We have, for example, like our college and university data set, we have the management company, the operating company for those campuses.
Okay.
And so that gives you a pretty good idea of the buying groups that you would need sort of a hunting license in to sell to those locations. But we don't always have every detail of what those relationships look like. And, you know, so we're constantly, you know, we have this amazing team of data scientists, data engineers, machine learning people, and partners. And we're constantly finding and bringing in new data and hearing feedback like that. Like, I wish I knew this. And then we're trying to come up with creative ways to go out and get that and bring it into the database. But, you know, there's always sort of a frontier there. And I think, you know, with college and university specifically, it is really cool to have that mapping of management company, operating company for every college, and obviously the independents. Like, we hear folks say, oh, there's a lot of value in that. But we also hear like, well, when are those contracts expiring? What's the next thing we can get? And so, you know, we don't have everything, but we're typically hoping, this is one of the reasons why we're in Slack or we're have this hospitality mindset, is we get to hear those ideas and questions as often as possible from our customers, so we can decide what to work on next.
Looking into the future, what are features of First Bite that you'd like to have that you don't currently have today?
I think, you know, so we just launched education, so K through 12 and CNU, and there's more sort of types of locations. You know, there's even on the retail side, there's a lot of ambiguity between, okay, is this a food service location inside of a grocery store? Is this a retailer? We want to map every single food-related location and have those locations and entities and every manufacturer in our platform. But I think the big next, and we want to keep working on these workflows. Like, there's workflows that we haven't really invested in as much that we think would add a lot of value for our customers, save them time, those types of things. One example is, you know, helping them work with their brokers. We have brokers that, you know, have operated inside of First Bite, and there's a lot we could build to sort of help brokers and manufacturers get closer together. But the big thing is getting closer to the transaction. And so, you know, the future for us is bringing operators into the story and helping manufacturers reach out to the operators that want to be reached out to. how they want to be sold to, and ultimately allow them to sort of do deals directly in a way that is sort of value add for both sides. And so facilitating those interactions is a big part of the future.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, what you're building out is definitely of need in the food service industry. And, you know, I talk to manufacturers every day and they're always like, there's always that, it's not a complaint, it's just a comment that on the retail side, you kind of alluded to this, that they have so much more data points that they can make decisions from. Where in food service, there really isn't that. As you mentioned, the distributor really controls a lot of the data and the information that is available out there specific to end users, in this case being operators, which makes the sales process very challenging. And so I think what you're building is definitely very much filling a need. And as you grow, it's going to only get bigger and bigger. How many customers do you hope to get onto the First Bite platform?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think our sweet spot is any manufacturer with a workflow in the food service space today. Sure. There's a lot of those, and you know, there's nothing like what we've built, and there's no reason. I don't think I've found a manufacturer, whether it's like we have cookware brands that are making pots and pans to plant-based foods to sustainable seafood, and I haven't really found an application where we're not able to go in and say, there's a really clear case that working with the platform is either going to save your sales team a bunch of time on repeatable tasks, allowing them to focus more on selling directly and communicating directly to restaurants, or see some sort of data that you don't have. I haven't run into like a wall where there's not a fit. I think, you know, you probably experienced this as well, where sometimes organizations are really early. They're like, they don't have a workflow for food service, or their product that maybe doesn't make sense in food service. So I don't know that we're going to be the sort of every possible person that's curious about food service should use our platform. But once you have a workflow, we're usually able to help.
That makes sense. Looking at the platform in terms of who you have on there today, is it just food service manufacturers, or could it be expanded out to really anybody who just wants information on restaurants and operators?
It can definitely be the latter. And, you know, I think tech providers are a big category. If you went to NRA, there's a lot of square footage for tech providers. It's 45 different point of sale systems. And those folks want to connect with restaurants. They want to find decision maker contact info. They have workflows and sales workflows. But I'd say our sweet spot is the manufacturer, whether it's equipment or food product. That's really who we're spending most of our time building for. And we think it's important to focus ultimately on that group as much as possible.
For those who have listened along thus far and you've piqued their interest, what does your engagements look like in terms of, you don't have to give this exact pricing structure, but is it like an ongoing monthly fee or is it one-time payment? Yeah. How does that work?
Yeah, it's a subscription monthly fee, usually an annual commit. Usually we're discounting for small businesses. And then if there's a service that we provide, we're cost plus, margin transparent. So this is costing us labor. We can't really discount it, but this is what it costs us. And we're agnostic if you want to use us or someone else. But we do want to make sure that if you use our platform, we're giving you every possible opportunity to make sure that it's connecting to that. Like, okay, we saved a lot of time, we saved money, or we met net new customers. And so that's the model. And then on the services side, it's like you can turn that on and off as you want. The data side is a little harder to turn it off because it usually our manufacturers are storing data in the platform. And then the restaurant data world is changing so quickly. You know, 10% of restaurants are churning every year, but there's a lot of change in existing restaurants happening just on a month-over-month basis as we bring in new data and refresh our data in the platform.
For those that want to work with you, do you have a website? And then what is the best way to contact you?
Yes, we have a website with lots of little buttons you can click to get in touch with us. It's firstbite.io. We also have, you know, LinkedIn. We're all very active on LinkedIn. Reed McCord on LinkedIn. Add me, send me a note. Let's talk. Always happy to talk to anyone in the space and talk about what we've built.
Fantastic. Well, Reed, thanks for joining me today, man. And I love what you're building. I think it's really going to solve a lot of needs and problems out in the food service industry. So I appreciate what you're doing. And thank you again for joining.
Thanks for having me on.